You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to another edition of the Arrowhead Addict Podcast with Sterling Holmes and Matt Connor. I am Sterling Holmes. Matt Connor back from a luxurious vacation drinking strawberry daiquiris. First off, Matt, I gotta say, I am not mad. I am just disappointed. You invited what, your wife and not your podcast co-host? How dare you?
As much as I wanted to see you in a Speedo next to me on the beach somewhere, I just thought it would be a better move for my long-term marital health to go with the missus.
Probably for your eyes, too. I don't think you want to see me in a Speedo. See the kind of tan that I got going on right now. The golfer's tan. It's not pretty.
Let me tell you, I have two shades. It's either pale white or slightly off-white, less pale, and I am now the latter. I'm proud of it, too. I'm proud. Although anyone would be like, dude, please put a shirt on, you're blinding me. And I'd be like, wait, I just got back from the Caribbean. I don't know what you're talking about.
No one knows what's wider, Matt Connor's chest or Heelman's mayo. A lot that I want to get into today. I want to get into a lot of Chiefs just... There's so much to get into, especially with Dan Sorensen, Juan Thornhill, that flip-flop. Obviously, Kansas City bouncing back, getting a 31-13 victory over Washington. But I want to talk about something that happened post-game that really got me fired up. One of my good friends, Josh Briscoe, was tweeting during the game, didn't tag Tyrann Mathieu, basically saying, hey, man, Tyrann, you missed a sack. You were throwing your hands up when Dan Sorensen was getting beat, and then Tyrann Mathieu just went scorched earth on Briscoe, getting after him. And was this something that kind of bothers you? Because it kind of bothered me. I don't think we're being divisive when we try and hold our star players accountable. I don't think we're being divisive when we have a question saying, hey, Tyrann, you know, you're out here getting on Dan Sorensen. We think you're a great player, but when you miss a sack, you don't wrap up. I think it's fair to question what is going on. And then Tyrann basically going on a tirade saying, you don't know anything about football. I had a fractured thumb. First off, we didn't know you had a fractured thumb. That might be good knowledge to have. Do you have any issues with some of the players acting like we're not being complete cheerleaders and not just being 100% on their side all of the time?
Maybe. But I'll say this. I'm not sure I'm all that interested in that part of the conversation. although I understand why people are. Like, I understand why you would say that's frustrating to you. I would understand why Josh, who's a great guy, you know, and we're all fans of Matthew, too. So, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to say one thing or the other here. I'm just, I think for me, here's the thing, here's the part of all this that fascinates me the most. Like I guess I'm trying to put myself in Matthew's shoes and trying to, like I'm at my worst when I go looking around on social media for things to like get under my skin. And it seems like in this instance that Tyrann Mathieu is like actively looking for the trolls, actively looking to get sort of riled up. Like there's like, it's almost like he's looking for a fight to pick. And in that manner, I just think, man, I've been there before in different things, like with family and politics or religion or what, like in these other categories. And I think, man, when I do that, I'm not my best self. And when I do that, I'm usually not that healthy. And when I'm doing that, there are 100 better ways for me to use my time. And instead, I get sucked up into those kind of like online social media battles, whatever. So there's a part of me that's wondering, what's going on? Like, what's really bothering Matthew? What's really making him use his time this way? I mean, here's a guy who's an emotional leader of the team. He's been around the NFL for a long time. He's a household name, even from college football days. So, like, I don't know why a guy like that is suddenly acting like he's shocked at online sports fan or even analyst behavior. Nothing Briscoe did is out of the norm. Nothing fans are saying are out of the norm. There's always going to be the idiot who like ats a player and then says something derogatory from their couch, you know, with Cheeto dust on their hands.
Yeah.
So and that's not even what Briscoe is doing. I mean, like, so I mean, there are those layers to talk about, I guess, with Briscoe and Tyrann, and I'd love to hear your take on that. But I guess for me, I'm almost like even more interested in, like, what's Matthew thinking? Why is he even diving into these waters? Is the mental health of this team coming apart with the losses?
For me,
is the championship expectations too much? I don't know.
Just for me, my issue is when you're in the media, you're not a cheerleader. Your job is not to say everything these guys do is infallible.
Right.
When you're in the media, your job is to just state the facts and basically ask questions what is going on when this is a team that has championship aspirations. When Tyrann Mathieu, I love Tyrann Mathieu. I want him to be here for a long time. But I think it's fair to say, hey, what is going on? You've been very outspoken, or at least gesture-wise, and then you don't wrap up on a tackle. I just think it's fair to ask these questions. It's not personal, nothing derogatory. I hate when people at players and say, you know, hurtful, horrible things to these guys. That's not the case here. You know,
right.
Just to me, I think that's an issue. I think it's a very good point. Why is Tyrann Mathieu even wasting time responding to things like this? But the other side that I want to take is maybe Tyrann Mathieu has a point of saying, have we been so negative on maybe we're focusing on the wrong issues, while we just saw the Chiefs defense hold Washington to 13 points, shut them out in the second half. That the fact, I get it's Washington football team. I understand that Tyler Heineke's the quarterback. I understand it's not some explosive world-beating offense, but they have averaged 24 points per game until Casey came in there, right?
Yeah.
Maybe Tyrann's just saying, stop focusing on what we're doing wrong and maybe start taking some positives away.
Now there I would disagree. Like there I would say, look, if you come into a game one third of the way through the season allowing the most points in football, you still have questions to answer. Sorry that going up against Ron Rivera's great offense, as well known as it is, didn't satisfy all of us. So in some ways it's a little frustrating. Like, if that's what's frustrating Matthew, then that's frustrating to me. Because certainly you have to know that a single win, even an 18-point win, over the Washington football team is not going to satisfy your doubters or silence your critics. But again, I've got to wonder, a man that we've seen really seem to have a good grip on the mindset it takes to play this game, seems to be losing that mindset a bit. And so it makes me wonder, is the wait for a long-term contract extension getting to his head? Is the losing getting to the team? Are there very real fractures being pointed out? Like maybe he is down on Sorensen, and then getting called on it, he wants to cover it up. I mean, like, I don't know. But when something seems disproportional, it always is. And so I think there's something bigger underneath the surface going on that is making these battles become a focus for Matthew at all.
So you're saying the Chiefs' defense is not completely fixed after this win? Because that would hurt, Matt. I think it's we have nothing to worry about.
I know you weren't saying that. And I do think they deserve credit. But I think most people went, okay, good. You needed to win that game. Now let's still talk about what's wrong. And I think that's appropriate.
So the biggest takeaway defensively was Juan Thornhill playing 100% of the snaps while Dan Sorensen was around previous Juan Thornhill numbers. I get it. It's a huge difference of competition that they were playing. But it is nice seeing Juan Thornhill get inserted and basically flip-flopping with Dan and the results being this promising.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Even more, for me, the story. Rashad outside corner Fenton, he played 100% of snaps. 100%. We saw him make multiple plays outside. I was like, who am I watching, and where did he come from, and when did he get this good with this many reps? I think we've seen him succeed, partially here and there, when he's not given a lot of responsibility, he seems to hold up really well. And you're like, man, what a great sixth-round pick. But if he can provide starters reps on the outside and look that good against better competition, that's really tremendous. He allowed Snead to stay inside, which that trio of Matthew, Thornhill, and Snead looked excellent. I mean, if they can move forward with that, as sort of a better trio of safeties, and then bring in Sorensen on like more like dime packages rather than a nickel. Yeah, I love Fenton's emergence when Charvarius Ward gets back. This could be a better secondary than they have been. That's exciting to me.
Yeah, I'm very enthused by this secondary. Obviously, Charvarius Ward, when he comes back, pushes everyone down a peg. I like keeping L'Jarius Sneed in the slot. That allows him to be more aggressive. That allows him to blitz because, frankly, he's probably been about the second best guy to get after the quarterback this year. And then Rashad Fenton. Anytime you can get a sixth rounder who can make that much of an impact, that is huge. Then having DeAndre Baker, Mike Hughes as depth pieces, that is very exciting. The defensive line has been disappointing, to put it mildly. Jaron Reed has been MIA. Frank Clark maybe had his best game of the year last game against the Washington football team. Michael Dana's continually just emerging. What have you seen from this defensive line? Is there some positives we can take? Is it still just a, you know what, this is who we got? They're not going to be very good, but what's your main takeaway on the defensive line through six games?
Yeah, I was impressed by what I saw on Sunday, and I'm actually very hopeful going forward. Remember this, we've had... Frank Clark has not been healthy. Chris Jones has missed multiple weeks at the same time. And we've seen Mike Dana emerge out of that as a worthy starter. So we're now looking at three guys who should be starting outside. I think we'd all love to see Chris Jones kick back inside. But Jaron Reed had four pressures on Sunday. So, like, if you were looking for, hey, are we ever going to see Jaron Reed? We just did. It didn't show up in the sack column, but he was there at least getting a few pressures. Again, it was on Heinicke. Again, their line's not that great. You know, they're without Brandon Scherf and Sam Cosmi, the rookie. So, say what you will about the competition, but Reed showed up. When Clark and Jones get healthy, Dana's going to look better than ever. We saw Tershawn Wharton interception on Sunday.
What hands, baby? hands.
Oh man,
to you.
He was incredible. He was incredible in that play. I'm just like, all these guys are still young enough and emerging enough that I think the line you're going to see in Week 16 is going to look way different than the line we've seen in Weeks 1-5. And not to mention, I mean, who knows if Whitney Mercilus is going to sign? I mean, as of right now, when we're talking, you know, Mercilus was just released today, this afternoon, by the Houston Texans, and word is that there's mutual interest on both sides. So, you know, there's a possibility, you know, for those who were like, why didn't we sign a Melvin Ingram type, you know, a guy, you know, Mercilus is going to be maybe the veteran addition that Okafor hasn't been so far. You know, we'll wait and see. Nothing's for certain.
The defensive line, my main takeaway is 25% of the cap space has been sunk into this defensive line. It is a sunk cost at this point. There are still a lot of reasons to be enthused. The emergence of Michael Dana is probably first and foremost. I think, obviously, when you have guys as athletic as Tershawn Wharton, as talented as Chris Jones, a guy who can do a backflip in Colin Saunders, you have to be like, okay, they're going to get at least a little bit better. My thing with Frank Clark here is, I don't want to just give him the starting job back. I think he needs to prove that he has earned it back, because Michael Dana has been impressive to me. If Chris Jones is not going to swing back inside again, we all seem to be on the same page. He plays better inside. I think he wants to be outside because he knows that's where the money is. DNs get paid more than the interior defensive lineman. I understand that. So if Chris Jones is saying, I'm going to be an edge guy, then I would like to see more Michael Danik. Frank Clark played the most snaps out of anyone on defense, not in the secondary, not named Fenton. I think it was Fenton, Snead, Matthew, and Thornhill. That's a lot of snaps for Frank Clark. I think Dana's been more impressive. I want to see some of those Frank Clark snaps go to Michael Dana. I understand the contract, but at this point, it is a sunk cost. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree, especially on Dana. Like, Dana deserves reps. However, you have to create them, you got to create them. He is a very dependable force whenever he's out there, and he's only getting better as he's adding experience and coaching week after week. Like, he's the perfect moldable player, and that's what's working so well for him. I guess I like Clark more than most people, and no, I'm not. You know, he's not anywhere close to his contract. I don't know what happened. I think he's ill far more than we realize. I think there's been, you know, obvious like little health issues that just continue to linger. You know, a hamstring doesn't just magically heal. I'm sure he was dealing with that, or maybe two hamstrings. You know, I don't like the deal, of course. But I also think that Clark is a very smart player. I think he helps the guys get lined up better along the line. He can certainly call out plays as he sees them. I mean, like, he's a very smart and instinctual player. And I think that's hard to quantify, like, for the average fan who's just looking at, like, a Pro Football Focus score and going, this guy sucks. I don't think Frank Clark sucks. I think Frank Clark is good. I think he's an asset against the run. I think he can be disruptive against the pass. He's just nowhere near $20, $25 million worth of it, and that casts a big shadow, like it or not.
So what I want to do, Matt, is actually talk about running backs, which for me seems completely like, what is happening? Is he in trouble? Do we need to send help? But first, Matt, we'll take a quick break. You're listening to the Arrowhead Attic Podcast with Matt Connor and Sterling Holmes. Welcome back to the Arrowhead Attic Podcast with Matt Connor and Sterling Holmes. All right, Matt, we're talking running backs, okay? I get it. This sounds crazy coming from me, but Darrell Williams was a tough runner, plunged in for two touchdowns. The overall numbers don't look great, 21 carries for 62 yards, but he scored when it mattered most. Those tough yards he picked up. Were you impressed with Darrell Williams? Was this something you thought Clyde could have done? What did you think from the run game against Washington?
Yeah, I like it. I like the total run package. I do think Clyde scores on those touchdowns. I don't think Darrell over Clyde in those scenarios makes that big of a difference. However, I don't want to take away from Darrell's performance. I just like the overall package. I love Tooney up front.
Phrasing.
I love Creed Humphrey. I love Trey Smith. I love Darrell and all that going in. I mean, don't you? I mean, the whole thing works for me. I just love seeing it.
No, I didn't say phrasing because you said you love the whole package. That's why I said that. But yes, Darrell Williams was a very solid runner. I just don't understand. I think fans on both sides of the equation of Clyde need to calm down. For some reason, because Darrell had two touchdowns, all of the people who are against Clyde, again, I'm against the first round tender on Clyde. I think you never draft a running back in the first round. Sure. But I think Clyde probably gets those. I don't understand why everyone's like, well, see, Darrell picked up those two tough touchdowns, so Clyde, he's horrible. I saw some of that on Twitter. I think Clyde gets those. And again, I think Darrell was fine, but I think Clyde does the same thing. I was enthused, but to me, the offensive line is the biggest storyline here. The addition of Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, that needs to be the main story. I don't care who's really the running back. I think Clyde's better as a pass catcher. They just haven't utilized him in that way a whole bunch yet early on in his career. But the big storyline has to be Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey and Joe Tooney. Those three guys have been absolutely incredible.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. How long do you think we're without Clyde?
Oh, man. I think they'll take a very cautious approach with Clyde. I'll say that. I don't think they're going to rush him back. I think they were pretty enthused by Darrell Williams. Again, the yards per carry isn't good, but those two plunges. This team isn't predicated on the run. This team is not. They're predicated on Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill. That's where they're predicated. So they're not going to rush Clyde back. I think we'll probably see a larger sprinkling in of Jerick McKinnon, especially in the pass game. But who knows? I've been wrong before. I keep thinking the Chiefs are going to use these running backs more as pass catchers. They haven't yet. But just to me, I don't see any chance they rush Clyde back until he's 100% healthy. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know why they would. I mean, you don't, like, you know, it's not a make or break position for the Chiefs. So you might as well, you know, you know what matters most if you're a member of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
You know what matters most, and that's January football. And so if doing something in October could jeopardize January, you just don't do it. You just don't. So I think that's why, you know, we're not seeing Josh Gordon rushed into the lineup. We're not seeing, you know, Willie Gay rush back from injury. So we're not gonna see the same with Clyde. That's just the way that works.
Since you, go ahead,
yeah,
sorry.
Go ahead.
I apologize. No, I cut in. That's on me, Matt.
I wanted to ask you something because I guess as I think more and more about the win on Sunday, I come away with something that almost sounds blasphemous and that's this. I can't think of a game where maybe I was more impressed with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce than I was on Sunday. And that sounds ridiculous, right? Neither, like those two have had record-setting games. Those two have, like, you know, like, sort of, like, had, like, video game cover sort of performances where you're like, oh my gosh, like, that was just, who has ever done that before? But when I was watching that game, there were multiple times when both Tyreek and Travis just looked injured, out of sorts. They were like, they would be taken to the sideline. Something's clearly wrong. They come back in. Something's still clearly wrong. They go back to the sideline. They were like playing through significant pain, I think. And some things were going on. And yet, when you look at the box score at the end of the game, both guys were right under 100 yards. Both guys caught around, you know, double digit catches or had double digit targets. Like I just look up and realize, oh my gosh, these guys were ridiculously productive, even when they couldn't get the big play, even when they were playing through a lot of pain, even when there wasn't like these like highlight reel catches. Somehow, they're the ones who kept moving the chains, and I just thought that is hella impressive to me. And I wondered what you thought of their sort of workmanlike effort on Sunday.
Besides you saying hella, I didn't know it was 2003 and we lived in New Jersey. No.
Hella Hill.
Gosh, I was very impressed. And that was a very good point you brought up. They were banged up going in and out of the game. It's seemingly Travis Kelce, multiple times I go, he's done for the game. And like three snaps later, he's in there catching a pass. And you're like, when did he check back in? This is how? Is he just a cyborg? But it was very impressive what they were able to do, play through pain. And again, you don't want them to get injured more, but at the same time, they know what's on the line. It's not a must-win game, because I hate saying must-win in a game that's in October when, again, there's so many games left in the schedule. But this was a game that they needed to win. Not must-win, but needed to win. And I think they saw the importance to play through pain and make sure they came out, you know, with the W. And they did. I am a little nervous because tight end was a position that they had so much depth. There were like four tight ends. This is crazy. But now Blake Bell's got a hurt back. Jody Fortson, this is just horrible to hear. You know, torn Achilles. And then Travis Kelce's obviously banged up. So you got Noah Gray as a rookie, the only fully healthy guy, tight end, on this roster. Does that make you nervous at all?
It does. It does. To me, I think you rest Travis Kelce for a week if you can. I hate to say it, because even when he's not catching passes, his presence alone changes the whole defensive game plan for opponents. And so, you know, you don't want to see him not out there, especially this week. I mean, this game against the Titans is a chance for the Chiefs to do something against a fellow AFC contender, and they haven't really had one of those statements since week one against the Browns, who now look like a total shell of themselves compared to like what we thought they'd be. So, you know, like, if they couldn't get it done against the Chargers, against the Ravens, against the Bills, then doing it against the Titans is a nice makeup. I think there's a lot on the line this week, so I think Kelce is in there, but definitely against like upcoming NFC East opponents. Cowboys, Giants, you know, those kind of games that are left, Kelce has to get some rest. He just does. And I don't know. Are you worried? Do you think, I mean, it may be exciting to see what Noah Gray can do.
I'm excited to see Noah Gray, and I don't think Travis Kelce is seriously hurt. I think maybe we'll see a little bit of a timeshare, and who knows when Blake Bell is going to come back. But I am very sad about Jody Fortson, but would I say I'm very nervous about the tight end position group? I'd say no. I mean, how many teams have four tight ends on a roster, right? This was a long shot to have four tight ends on the roster. I absolutely feel, and I hate for Jody Fortson, because he was a couple big touchdown catches, right? You know, he made a few plays. He had a huge catch against Washington, that one we went over the top. You're like, my goodness, what an athlete. So I feel for him as a, you know, as a personal level, but Chiefs having four tight ends on the roster, that was just already gravy at some point. That was just almost overkill. It was like, hey, we have four guys who are really good at this one position. We don't want anyone else in the NFL to touch these guys, so we're just going to keep them all. I don't think they're going to be hurting anytime soon. Going to the Tennessee game, I want to say something that, it's going to sound crazy. I am pretty confident in the linebacking core stopping Derrick Henry. This sounds stupid. I can hear people yelling right now. I can hear them in the studio. I can hear people just yelling. It's supposed to be soundproof. I can still hear those people yelling at me. Here's why. Nick Bolton.
I knew it.
Nick Bolton here.
You have a chest tattoo of Nick Bolton, don't you?
It's my thigh, but yeah. Nick Bolton's best attribute is going north-south. He's bad in pass coverage. We know this. Titans don't really have anyone who can take advantage of that. Derrick Henry ain't going out. We don't see a lot of screen passes to Derrick Henry. Titans tight ends, I'm not nervous about those guys. They hand the ball off, and I'm not saying Nick Bolton's going to just be ripping Derrick Henry game in and game out, tackling him behind the line of scrimmage, but he gets down so fast, and if he can be the first one there, make him have to stutter, and they can gang tackle Derrick, I'm confident. Just remember, last time they faced the Titans, Derrick Henry only had 69 yards rushing. I think this actually plays into the Chiefs' linebacking core better, because I think they have a chance to hit Derrick behind the line of scrimmage, and that starts with Nick Bolton. Am I crazy?
I don't think you're crazy. Let me ask you this, though. Tannehill is dangerous. They added, not only do they have A.J. Brown, but they have Julio Jones. Are you worried at all about the air attack there?
I like the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs' secondary is their best position group on the defensive side of the ball. The emergence of Fenton has been great. I really like L'Jarius Sneed. I obviously like Tyrann Mathieu. And now that one, Thornhill is going to be getting the majority of snaps. That, to me, shored up the major issue in the secondary. I'm not too worried about the secondary. The main issue, again, is going to be stopping Derrick Henry. That's what we've seen time and time again with this Tennessee team. Obviously, play action, Ryan Tannehill, that plays a part. But the more I've looked into it, the more I've tried to figure out how the Chiefs are going to be able to stop Tennessee's offense, the more I've come out that I think the Chiefs have a better shot than most are going to give them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think, it's not how you want to. It's not how you want them to match up, but it's also important to note that the Titans are really hurting right now. You know, we just saw Taylor Lewan leave on a. He got carted off on a stretcher.
Yeah.
They're coming off a short week. They just lost a wide receiver and a cornerback to torn ACLs, and they already had a starting cornerback in Christian Fulton. On IR the week before. So they're banged up. Their secondary is really thin. The Chiefs could really do some damage early, and if they can play from a lead, then the game will be over.
What's your prediction? Let's do it. We haven't done this. I don't think we've done a score prediction, you and me, on a show this early. It's Tuesday, so we got a lot of time left before Sunday.
We do.
A lot of things could happen.
I think the results are going to look like last week. I think it's going to be like a 17-point win. So I'll guess 31-14.
That's me clapping and pumping the crowd up back here. that was me. I don't know if you could even hear the claps, but that's what I was doing.
I like it. It was nice.
I'm going to go 31-20. I think Kansas City rights the ship. They continue on this hot stretch. I think the defense makes plays. The over-under, I believe, is set at 56.5. I can't believe I'm saying a Chiefs game is going to go under, but I think it does.
Man, I get it. You're a believer in this defense, my friend.
Yeah, I've kind of bought in, and that's sad, but there's so much talent on this defense. I can't imagine them being as historically bad as they were. I always like to think things even out. I'm huge into numbers and analytics. I'm a huge analytics nerd. I get it. But the main thing I've learned from numbers is eventually they even out. If something is crazy high, eventually it's probably going to come down a little bit. If something is crazy low, eventually it's probably going to come up a little bit. That defense was so unsustainably bad, at some point, trends are going to point up. That's what I thought was going to happen. It happened against Washington, and I hope it continues against Tennessee. Before we get out of here, let me ask you something. Do the Chiefs still win the AFC West, or is this now the Chargers division at least this year?
Oh, get out of here with that! What a two-dimensional question. Yeah, dude. The Chiefs will win. The Chiefs will win the West by two, maybe three games.
Oh no!
Like it's not. Oh yeah.
Oh, have you taken a look at the Chargers' schedule?
I mean, I don't need to. I don't need to.
They're playing like UAB. It's like, I'm a Mizzou fan, so I can say it. They're basically playing Mizzou for the rest of the year. Like, when Cincinnati might be their second hardest game for the rest of the season, it's a very easy schedule for the Chargers.
I get it with the schedule, and I like the Chargers. I think they're doing some impressive things, but I just think the Chiefs are a hibernating bear who's going to wake up. I'm just not worried. I'm as bullish as ever on the Chiefs, on Mahomes. Yeah.
I don't know if the Chiefs win the AFC West, and I don't care. I don't care, because you know why? I don't think they get the number one seed in the AFC overall. I think they've dug themselves into a hole. They've lost to some teams that they're going to end up being in contention with. So at that point, I don't even care if they win the AFC West. You know, it's great to put on a plaque. It's great to say you're AFC West champions. They've had a stranglehold in this division for so long. Frankly, I don't care, because the Chargers' schedule is so easy. If they win, if they only lose one or two more games, I think the Chiefs beat them when they play them again. Does that mean the Chiefs go undefeated for the rest of the year? I don't think so. I think that's probably a little foolhardy endeavor. All that matters is playoff time. That's what it comes down to, and I think the Chiefs, their experience will shine through in the playoffs. I know the Chargers don't have Anthony Lynn anymore. I know Phillip Rivers is gone, but when you haven't had that experience in the playoffs, I think that actually makes a difference. So whether the Chargers win the AFC West, I don't even care. Come playoff time, I would take Kansas City over anyone else in the AFC.
Yeah. And you're right about what matters most. You're right about what matters most, and those things don't matter, like the regular season and divisional titles and whatever. But I think the Chiefs end up 13-4. I think they lose one game between now and when we're talking about what matters most. And I just don't think the Chargers have the legs for that ultimate kind of record.
Do they have the arms, though? They might not have the legs, but do they have the arms?
Brandon Straley has nice legs.
Man, has there been a coach that has won the press conference more than Brandon Staley?
That guy. I don't even know anything about him.
Dude, he's trending on Twitter. Well, you were gone in the Bahamas or wherever you were, and he seemingly every single other day was just getting lauded on NFL Twitter. It was crazy.
Yeah, he's like a Ted Lasso, giving quotes like what everyone should be saying. He's the anti-Gruden, that's for sure.
Yeah, we didn't even get to John Gruden. You know what? I don't think we need to. We'll leave it as is. This was the Arrowhead Addict Podcast with Matt Connor and Sterling Holmes. Stay tuned. Patrick Allen, Matt Verderam will come with you another podcast later on this week. If you'd like to drop us a review, please do. Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast. We are out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.